James Agee's daughter says Agee led a kind of upside-down life.
Often I would wake my father up when I came home for lunch with a big glass of milk and bourbon, because he went to sleep when I went to school. Usually he worked all night when he was home.
Dee Dee Agee, a writer, remembers her father absolutely adored the movies.
So one day I came home for lunch and he was there all up and ready to go, and he said, "Come on, we're going to the movies, school be damned." And he took me to see 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, which was, you know, a magical experience, really.
On over! Head for that ship!
We went in a cab, and it was a bright, sunny day, and we went up to Times Square, where I don't think I'd ever been, and into this womb-like theater, and I got popcorn and bonbons. I was probably about 7.
Agee died the year after that, in his mid-40s, of a heart attack. James Agee was primarily a writer of prose and poetry, in a style which sometimes combined the two. During the Depression, he'd written Let Us Now Praise Famous Men, the radical landmark book with photos by Walker Evans, which described in detail the lives of some of America's poorest citizens, sharecroppers in Alabama. He'd been a journalist and written fiction, but film was his fascination. He never gave up the idea that the movies, as he said, had the grandest prospect for any popular art since Shakespeare's time. He became a film critic for Time and The Nation magazine in the 1940s, a very different era.
The movies actually were much more central to the culture than they are now, despite all the coverage now. There's so much other media that movies are just one medium among many. Then it was everything.
David Denby writes movie criticism for The New Yorker magazine. He discovered Agee's work in the 1950s in reissue, when he was staying up late and watching old movies on TV.
So Agee became our guide to the melodramas, the westerns, the musicals, a kind of perfect troubadour and memorialist of the studio system in its final phase.
I've made a big mistake in my life, and I've got to be this way just once to fix it.
Of The Postman Always Rings Twice, Agee said in May of 1946 that it was
mainly a terrible misfortune from start to finish. It is what can happen, especially in Hollywood, if you are forced to try both to eat your cake and have it, and don't realize that it is, after all, only good pumpernickel.
But Agee also wrote ecstatically about movies, with a very distinctive kind of passion. Later that same year, he wrote about Best Years of Our Lives, which he loved. He said the film was
so well cast and well acted that there is no possible room to speak of all the people I wish I might.
How long since you been home?
A couple of centuries.
It is done,
he continued,
about as well as a movie can imaginably be made among the frustrating facilities of a contemporary American studio.
There was an almost sacramental love of movies in his writing.
Film critic Peter Rayner.
Which is not to say that he wasn't a terribly funny writer very often, and that he had a tremendous and sometimes very stinging wit.
The Green Years has been described in the ads as wonderful by practically everybody within Louis B. Mayer's purchasing power except his horses. So I hesitate to ask you to take my word for it. The picture is awful.
But what I still take away from his writing today is this tremendous, tremendous love for movies of a kind that I think was almost too demanding of film itself.
You know, one thing I picked up from him, I think,
critic and author Andrew Sarris.
He used a lot of adjectives. And I do, too. I overload with adjectives, even at the risk of, you know, violating the laws of belles-lettres, cutting the flow of the prose and all that stuff. The idea of it is a kind of humility before the visual image, that what you see in movies, you can't ever approximate with mere words. By piling on the adjectives, you come a little closer and closer to get the precise thing, but you're never going to get there. You know, it's a hopeless task. And I think that's what he represents.
I would particularly mention the very pretty, very talented, rather velvety The Clock, the very hard-surfaced, bright, superficial The Lost Weekend, the hard-working, exciting, objective Burma, the charming but equivocal and overrated Colonel Blimp.
In fact, sometimes he was accused of going beyond criticism.
Agee's perceptions of movies were so sharp. His camera sense was so great that in a way he would often remake the movies that he saw into the movies he wanted them to be as opposed to the movies that they were. And so you can read vast passages of descriptions in A.G.'s reviews of movies, and then you race to see the film and you realize that the film that he's describing is so much more interesting than the movie that exists.
With all that, it was only natural that Hollywood called and A.G. answered. He went to work for John Huston on the screenplay for The African Queen, and he wrote Night of the Hunter for Charles Laughton, Laughton directing for the first and last time in his career.
Salvation is a last-minute business, boy. Keep talking, preacher.
But the closest A.G. came to the film life he craved was his relationship with Charlie Chaplin. He idolized Chaplin with an almost religious fervor.
He had a pantheon of heroes that never wavered.
Author John Ranovix. His new book, Chaplin and A.G., unearths an unproduced screenplay A.G. wrote for Chaplin's Tramp character. And it explores A.G.'s Chaplin obsession and, by extension, his love affair with cinema.
He had certain role models who he felt had never compromised in their art, and Chaplin was one of them.
Like his daughter, A.G. had his own transforming experience in the movies, seeing a Chaplin film with his father. Later, he got to know Chaplin and consulted to him on the film Limelight. It was like a dream come true. He kept getting closer to the dream, but A.G. died before he got a chance to direct his own film.
But in a sense, the movies he directed are the reviews that he wrote.
Peter Rayner.
There's a letter that Dwight MacDonald published in his own collection on movies from A.G. when they were both teenagers. A.G. described how he wishes that he could have the nerve to become a filmmaker. And in a sense, this played out in his reviews. On the one hand, it's heartbreaking that we don't have actual films that he made, but on the other hand, I don't think anyone has ever seen film with the kind of poetic intensity that he brought to his writing.
James A.G. left works of distinction in every genre he tried. But his film criticism, still in print 50 years after his death, is like a precious time capsule. Reports on a daily diet of moving images, which he kept on trying to capture, redefine, and describe. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishko.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.